Mental health and wellness are crucial aspects of well-being. Their understanding and acceptance are vital for the progress of society. In a cultural context, mental health is often shrouded in stigma and misunderstanding, leading to a lack of proper support and care for those affected. Heal Your Mind with Tracy Kotzen is a platform for candid conversations that enlighten and enrich our understanding of mental health and wellness. Join us as we demystify, destigmatize, prioritize, and shine a light on mental health and healing. Heal Your Mind podcast with Tracy Kotzen is hosted by Mental Wellness Initiative and supported by the Ford Foundation.
Good day and welcome to episode 10 of Heal Your Mind with me, Tracy Kotzen. Today we're going to be talking about how trauma is stored in the body and how it manifests in different ways. To help us with this topic, we've got four incredible experts with us today. We have Akuswa. Akuswa is joining us at the ungodly hour of 5 a.m. from Trinidad and Tobago. She's an award-winning social entrepreneur in the women's sector across the Caribbean spaces and does a lot of work in supporting women and girls in various journeys of recovery. Welcome, Akuswa.
Hi, thank you for having me at this ungodly hour, as you call it.
Sometimes I think it's the most godly hour. You were just talking about how you get to listen to the beautiful Caribbean birds at 5 a.m. I'm a little jealous.
You're welcome to come now anytime.
I intend to. Also joining us from Cape Town is Verona Smith. Verona is a holistic practitioner. She's a TRE practitioner. TRE is the somatic practice of releasing stress and trauma from the body. She's a hypnotherapist and a wellness and corporate soft skills coach. Welcome, Verona.
Thank you very much.
In studio, we have Dr. Bulatov, fondly known by us as Dr. B. Dr. B is a homeopath with a beautiful, long and varied medical career. Hello, Dr. B. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks so much.
And we have our almost in-house at this point counseling psychologist, Jenna Bayer. Welcome, Jenna.
Thank you. How are you doing, my friend?
Good. Very good. Thank you.
Good.
It was very nice to actually have you in here after, 2 years of intending to have you.
About time, Trace.
It's about time.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Great stuff. So I want to kick us off with Dr. B. Let's get our medical expert to start our conversation. Dr. B, when we're talking about trauma and the impact on the body, can you give us an overview of what that might look like?
Well, lately, the neuroscience and neurolinguistic programming and neuroimmunology and all holistic systems that various practitioners do in the world found out that a trauma is not just an emotional or mental experience. It physically changes the structures. It physically changes the anatomical structures of the brain and many other structures in the body. Mm-hmm. The reason being, when you experience a traumatic event and you're not prepared for it, it's a shock. So the amygdaloid complex of the brain responds with SOS signals to various other brain parts. And that unfortunately causes physical change in those parts, like a hippocampus, amygdaloid complex, cortex, thalamus, hypothalamus. And practically that old view that trauma is just in the brain and is like an emotional or mental experience is outdated.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, our body, every single part of our body, right to the bone marrow and bones and blood and tissues, also stores trauma in a specific way. The point is that, for example, from my experience, because I do a body work called Quantum Leap Body Work, which is guided body work since 2004. I never started for it officially. For example, if you have a problem with a male, no matter relative or colleague or friend or whoever male that caused some hurt, you'll manifest that trauma in your right side of the body, whether It'll be a leg, an arm, a chest, an abdomen, you know. And if it's a woman, it will be on the left. Interestingly, because I've also been practicing radiology for about, since 1988, interestingly that the right iris reflects the right side of the side of the body and the left, obviously, the left side of the body. But the inheritance in male, your right iris reflects your father's side and your left iris reflects your mother's side. Mm. And in female, it's the other way around. So the somatization of trauma is a real thing. It's not an imagination or something that it's an abstract. It's not an abstract. It's an unfortunate reality that unless that part is released from that trauma through various body touch techniques, you would not be able to cancel that traumatic circuit from that memory that constantly bugs your brain through the nerve endings, you know, whether some sympathetic or parasympathetic. And it's like a thorn, you know, that is there, and that thorn constantly signals your brain that there is a problem, there is a problem. Look at it, sort it out, you know, do something, because this thing never stops. And people normally say, as we think, so we are. Yes, absolutely. But what is in the body affects the brain equally. So it's not just one-way road, you know, it's two-way road always. And I personally think that all people that work with the mind, they have to add the body, body release also, because if you purely do cognitive therapy and apply any kind of psychology, for example, or hypnotherapy or any other modality, you need to attend equally to the body, releasing specific body part in the most comfortable way that the patient is ready to allow you to do so. But just to do only talk and hypnotherapy, I think this is a bit one-sided, knowing now that also that many psychologists become more interested in holistic therapy and applied psychology and not just having talking sessions, which is obviously great. But we need to attend equally both sides, the brain, the mind, and the body at the same time.
Thank you, Dr. B. So I just want to clarify something. You started your career as a trained medical doctor and have added quite a number of holistic therapies to your repertoire. Right. And I wanted to clarify that, because this is a medical doctor who's saying to us that it goes beyond, you know, it goes beyond three dots at the end of that sentence. And so we really need to look at the person completely holistically. Thanks, Dr. B. Jenna, Dr. B said that talk therapy is not enough. What is your take on that, being a counseling psychologist?
To make this as relatable as possible, most clients whom I've helped who've had body-related challenges have said that the reason for these challenges is because they feel trapped. Trapped in a cycle of abuse, trapped in a context where they're experiencing the psychological impact of discrimination. They might be a teenager in a car on the way to school, and they have a knot in their stomach because of the potential of more bullying to take place. And so 100%, he's right in the fact that talking is not enough. But what I will say, the genesis of that physical pain has been that trapping feeling and I'm not enough feeling, and I feel out. How do I fit in with this group, or what am I not doing, or what will it be today? How will I be marginalized again today? And so it's that devaluing feeling for me from experience from clients that has resulted in those physical, I guess, symptoms.
Right.
So absolutely right. I'll always note the physical symptoms, but the ultimate goal for me in therapy will always be to liberate, because obviously I'll address the physical symptoms, because a lot of the physical things tells me about their functioning, the impact on their functioning.
Mm.
But I also feel that that's half the battle.
Right.
The other half for me is so that they can feel free to speak their truth.
Mm.
And in a world that's saying you're not welcome here, or you have to do something to fit in, or I will only love you if you do this or this.
Mm.
So 100% absolutely yes, but symptomatic of a bigger picture of a I don't fit into this environment or culture or family dynamic.
Yeah. Right. Thank you. So I'm hearing, although you guys are wording it differently,
yeah,
I'm hearing that there's absolutely a connection between symptomology in the body and emotional content.
Yes.
and what's going on in the mind, the thought processes that end up manifesting something systemically.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Yes.
All right. So I want to go across to Akuswa. Akuswa, in literally the other end of the world, and in your work with helping young girls, we've spoken about that before we started recording. What do you see as manifestations with the people that the communities that you're serving in Trinidad and Tobago? What do those manifestations look like for people in your space?
I believe it's quite similar to what was just said. I think with the younger ladies, you see it with acne on their faces. You see it with them gaining weight. You see it with headaches and migraines. You see it with them showing up with problems with their menstrual cycles. So those are the main things that I see with the young ladies who are really traumatized or who have been through a lot of abusive situations, gender-based violence, etc. Most of it is around their cycles, menstrual cycles, migraines, headaches, acne. And as a teenager, that impacts them so much, because you talk about bullying before, people would zone in on how they look, and social media, you want to present yourself in a certain way because you compare yourself to others. So it's really a cycle, and being trapped in that cycle and not knowing why, and using external remedies rather than going within. If they're open to it and if they get the support, then they zone in, okay, this might be because of what happened to me or what is happening to me, rather than externally.
Thanks, Akuswa. I wish someone had told me back in the day that the internal environment is potentially creating my acne. It would have been very valuable information. And I'm glad we know that now, right? So we can give more appropriate support. And then talking about addressing these things from within. Verona, in your space, as a holistic practitioner, you do body work. So you can speak a little bit to how that body work addresses this internal world and the way you are seeing clients show up with trauma manifesting physically, and what you do to help shift that for them.
Thank you. Well, as you know, I'm a TRE practitioner, tension, trauma release, exercises, experience like yourself, and had the privilege, as I said, facilitating about 15, maybe more now, the people through this process. And many of them come to me with a combination, of mental and physical presentations of their trauma. And when I used to do hypnotherapy, if I may say, often I would tell a client first to do TRE because they were too worked up to do the hypnotherapy. I always try to combine both, but my priority has always been TRE. Because I have never seen anything, and I did not mention on my CV, but I was with the Modern Mystery School for many years, And I did a lot of different healing, such as activating dormant DNA. And incredible, you know, results as well. And, you know, working in the auric field and, you know, doing energy clearings and things like that. So I've got a big background in that, but I just found and focused on TOE in the last few years simply because of the profound results I've seen. So if, if I could share one or two, you know, as a demonstration quickly, to back up what I'm saying, I know you're fully aware of it as well, Tracy. So, you know, I had a best friend come see me. She had a lot of trauma. Her mother nearly died in hospital a number of times. And then, I said to her, and she had terrible backache and migraines. I said, look, come to me and let's go through the TRE process. I always emphasize to clients that it is a process. If you have an infection and you start antibiotics, you can't take one and expect it to the infection to heal. It is a process that you have to commit to, and I normally make clients commit to it and sign a commitment to their own journey. So she arrived, and she couldn't. She was very into her gym at the gym, and used to go three times a week. But she, as a result of this trauma, she had this severe backache and she could not touch her toes. And she presented with this, as I said, backache. So after her first session, she could actually touch her toes. And the next morning, literally, some people have exponential results. Her backache was gone. I've seen it with migraines, people going through, you know, it's a lot of sexual abuse. I've worked with a lot of clients with sexual abuse. And I have been totally amazed at how they can talk about it and share it without any reaction, because that post-traumatic stress disorder has gone right out of the system. As we all said, you know, all trauma sits in the tight muscle tension patterns in the brain all over, as the doctor was saying. And I'm just in closing on this. I'm of the opinion that if everybody, I mean, we are genetically encoded to shake. It is in our DNA. Look at what the animals in the wild. I always, you know, propose that when I explain how it works, is, you know, the example of the zebra and what happens. And we have that it's been socialized for some reason out of us by the age of 7. So I have a take that if everybody in the world did TRE, which is what we designed to do, we really will move to a world of peace. That's my take. So I've been driven, you know, to share this with as many people around the world as I can. And I physically also traveled extensively sharing it. So thank you.
Thanks, Verona. So to echo Verona's sentiments, I'm also a TRE practitioner, have been for 14 years now. And I want to lens this from one perspective at this moment, which is the child sexual abuse survivor. I mean, we could talk for days about the long-term effects of that, but there's one I want to focus on, which is how often survivors almost divorce their bodies just so they don't have to be present to that feeling of violation and pain. Jenna, you'd know this out of your practice too. And then the likelihood of having long-term sexual dysfunctions, of developing eating disorders, all of that becomes such high-risk territory for a survivor. And I ask survivors one question before I start the process to kind of get a sense of how divorced they are from their body. And that is, do you know when you need to go to the bathroom? Or do you hold it until it's running down your leg? And it's astonishing how many people will say, yeah, I'm the person who holds it until the last possible second. And when you ask a few more questions, they don't know when they're hungry, when they're thirsty, when they're tired, when they need to take a break, you're so separated from your body in a really material physical sense. You don't know what's going on from the chin down. And TRE is so helpful in restoring that mind-body connection and bringing you back into consciousness of your own body, and then being able to address the things that seem behavioral, right? The things that and I'll use an eating disorder as an example, you're then able to kind of talk to your body, negotiate with your body, even thank your body for whatever protective mechanisms it's had to put in place until that time, and then give it permission to release, you know, stuff for healing. But if you don't even know you have a body, if you can't feel your body, if you can't detect your biological functions need to happen, how do you even begin to heal holistically? And I find TRE to be an incredibly valuable tool in restoring that connection for mind-body with myself conversations, if that makes sense. Yeah. Jenna, you're nodding quite a bit. Is some of this resonating with you?
What's resonating is a few things. Firstly, the prevailing and common symptom of the stomach bug, or the butterflies in the stomach. I mean, even if a personal thing, I'm a lecturer, and they class didn't like their marks. So they decided to do a group silent treatment on me because they didn't like their marks. Oh. And so the next time I went, I had a pretty notable knot in my stomach.
Mm.
And so it was and I realized that that's where TRE and those things can help, just to release that stuff that sits in there. And the other thing definitely is the sweating palms and the shaking hands. So when Verona says it is in the human DNA to shake, I can relate to what she's saying because there's a natural manifestation of that shaking. I can hear that. So not only is this resonating in terms of practice, but on a personal level too. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, like, how often would we, you know, something terrible happens to a person and they're sitting there and they're shaking and we're like, oh, they're in shock.
Yeah.
And we try to almost suppress that shaking response. But in fact, that is the body releasing, you know, that kind of onslaught of stress hormones that has just cascaded in. And so they're shivering, but they're not shivering necessarily. It's not a temperature thing. It's the body's trying to regulate itself.
Yeah.
Dr. B, from you. How does all of this sound to you? Does it make – so I want you to help me make it make sense for people who are not psychologists or experts in their field, just for regular people. How can we make this make sense for them?
Well, it's very simple. We have the spirit of the creator in us that creates the soul, and the soul runs the body until the spirit leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So, when the soul and the body are challenged, whether mentally, emotionally, and physically, they will try by all means to preserve the body and keep the homeostasis as good as possible. It means to have a balance of energy flow, blood flow, lymph flow, nerve endings, impulses to carry on as normal. So the body will do what has to be done in order to bring the body back to energetic and other balance. No matter it's you put your hand, for example, in hot water and the body will cool the hand.
Mm.
And that's called secondary reaction. And if you go other way around, you put your hand in the cold water, the body will warm that hand. So now the only healing reaction in us is the secondary reaction. That means the reaction of the body, not the initial reaction of the agent.
Right.
And this is how, for example, homeopathy is the best and the most specific way that it challenges the body, that the secondary reaction is provoked, not the primary. The primary reaction is the artificially created energetic disease by the remedy that is proven on various healthy individuals, and you know what it will do. But the body secondary reaction is the healing reaction that restores the body fully.
Mm-hmm.
All the energetic balance and blood flow and lymphatic flow and nerve impulses. Like, for example, Jenna was saying that it's a common feeling that you have knot in the solar plexus for many people, billions. It's the most common feeling when you have like a premonition or fear or anxiety. Or any negative emotion, you know, like you knot it, like you literally, you like, you know. And Interestingly, in homeopathy, we have a book called Repertory, which is all body parts a day, and all the remedies for each specific symptom are listed. So we have a rubric, emotions felt in the stomach.
Hmm.
And there is about 6 to 10 remedies only. And so one of them is the right remedy for that specific person.
Hmm.
So what I'm trying to say, homeopathic remedies are highly specific and direct. So if the right remedy in right potency is given, this is immediately resolved within seconds, minutes, hours.
Hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Pleasure.
I want to go across to Akusa. You were describing these physical symptoms that your young ladies manifest when they're under extreme stress. Do you have holistic therapies that you use to support them? And maybe you can share with us what those are.
Yeah, so we focus, just as you mentioned earlier, sometimes you become neck down dead.
Neck down dead. Mm-hmm.
And so what we've recognized is most of them really leave their bodies, and that shows up in so many ways. So what we focus on is getting back in touch with your bodies and knowing that your body is such a magnificent vehicle that you can use to heal, and you can use to show up in the world and be yourself. So we always use different methods, such as we start off with yoga for all our sessions, and with that yoga, a lot of them resist before because, you know, why do I need to use my body? Why do I need to stretch and breathe? But it works. 15 minutes in, everybody's like, oh, super chill, like, oh, this is the best thing ever. So we use yoga, we use dancing. In Trinidad and Tobago, you may or may not know that we have one of the best carnivals in the world. And that was a form of resistance back in the day. Carnival started as a resistance, a method of resistance. And so a lot of the dances that came out of carnival was banned. And particularly with women, they use it as a way of exerting or showing their power. So we incorporate a lot of our traditional dancing that used to be banned back in the day. And it puts a smile on your face because it's just you using your body to show not just a sensuality, which is what the government, the system at the time believed was loose, but it was a form of resistance. It was to show that I do own my body. So we use dancing. We use a method of martial arts called capoeira, which originated Angola through Brazil. So we use capoeira as well. And those are the three main ones that we use. And then we go into nature and we connect with the waterfalls, the trees, the earth, the grounding as an example. So those are the main ones that we use, and because it's something new to them, a lot of the young ladies come from what we would call a concrete jungle. Even being in a beautiful place where there's a lot of beaches and waterfalls and rivers, they haven't been exposed to that. So being exposed, it rewires their brain, and you just see on their face how joyous and calm they become just stepping into a cold river or waterfall, putting their bare feet on the grass.
Hmm. Absolutely. I think we forget that we are not on the earth, but of the earth. You know, we are part of the beating heart of this planet. And when we live in our concrete jungles, as it were, it detaches you in ways that don't support healing, that don't support just wellness in general. I'm a huge fan of connecting with nature. I'm also a huge fan of dancing. Sadly, though, I don't know any Caribbean dance moves, so I'm definitely going to have to. But I'm picturing we've got hips going, right, which is just, it's reveling in the majesty of this divine feminine energy that is accessible to us and can be drawn from the earth itself. So when you go into nature, that's what you're doing. You're connecting with divine energies, masculine ones, feminine ones. It's just gorgeous. And if I can't get to talk therapy, the next best medicine for me is pack my backpack and go sit in the mountain for 3 days, because sometimes that's the best therapy that there is. It's just connecting back to nature. And it's always recommended, Jenna, as a supportive therapy for people in struggle, right? But we never tell them why. We tell them, go to the mountains, go have a swim, but we never tell them why. We never talk about that energetic exchange that happens between the person and nature.
Well, and I think the reason for that is because it's been painted or designed as a luxury. Mm. Like taking this time out is a luxury, or, you know, doing a bit of an R&R is almost, you know, like you're lucky to do it.
Mm.
But that's as important as your work, or as important as the other things you do. But when you live in a situation where things are very highly industrialized, where you get into autopilot, suddenly it's Friday and you're doing this, you can forget about connecting to nature. Mm. It becomes this footnote that you do here and there.
Mm.
So, It's very rare where I hear patients say, maybe the best thing for me is to connect with nature. More often it's to deal with a relationship challenge or deal with an issue or a conflict relating to something. But it almost seems like some mystical thing that gets rarely done.
Mm.
And that's a shame, really,
yeah.
Because it is really an important thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you. Verona. You live in the Western Cape, where there's an incredible amount of natural resources. You've got mountains, oceans, rivers. Do you ever incorporate those sorts of things into your practices for clients? If so, in what way? And if not, what are you finding the clients want to engage with?
I'm a big proponent of going into, you know, nature. And so I always discuss that with my clients, you know, ask when last did you take a hike or walk in a beautiful park, et cetera, et cetera. So, but I haven't, you know, I have done retreats, out in, you know, in nature, lovely settings. Which I find is absolutely stunning, especially, you know, getting people to go walk barefoot, you know, on the ground. And to engage with a tree, speak to a tree, you know, ask it questions, you know, just fun things like that. So I definitely there's no doubt in my mind that you know, nature is so healing, and the intelligence of nature. I mean, research is now showing that plants talk to one another, you know, and they help one another, and
mm-hmm.
They, you know, and every, there isn't, I have such awe for nature. You know, every time I see the mountains behind me, I just say, oh, you are so beautiful. Thank you, God, you know, for what you have created for us to heal. And the other thing that I do, though, is I do power meditations. I do them online as well. I haven't been doing them for a few months now, but we'll start again. And I have clients around the world who join, and that's an hour meditation. It is the most, and I've, you know, having been so holistic and been involved in alternative, you know, I've studied the Kabbalah and things like that and all sorts of things. This meditation covers virtually every single type of meditation in the hour. You go so deep that people don't want to come out. In the Middle East, when I was doing them, you know, all the clients would say, I have never never experienced a meditation like this in my life. So I really need to get those going. And part of that journey is going through nature in the visualization. But it even uses a bit of hypnotherapy, a little bit of hypnotherapy style, but most, it's a combination of everything, visualization, going inward. And it's I can tell you now, it's amazing. And I could even do that with you, Akusa, you know, online as a start.
That's great.
Can I be a slight cynic? I agree. What you're saying is correct. However, I'm also deeply concerned that we live in a world. There's this phrase called narcissistic navel gazing, where people will, you know, look at the world only from their perspective, and they'll meditate 75 times a day, and they'll do their yoga and their Pilates, whatever it is, but they won't change their perspectives, or they won't address their biases, or they address their attitudes to whether it's different cultures or races. So on the one hand, great, but the other hand, it can seem very individualistic. So it's not body work at the expense of or at the ignoring of a community mentality. Because society's change when perspectives change, when people look inward and say, how can I address my biases differently? Mm. So I'm not doubting the efficacy of the body work, but not at the expense of humility, and looking at your community and how your perspectives can change. Yeah. Mm.
Thank you, Dana. That is such an important point. There's been a commercialization of healing that is really getting under my skin at the moment. And everything seems to be about let's build resilience. But the combination of commercialization and this build resilience story almost feels like we need to just think of more creative ways to suck up and be okay with untenable situations. Yeah. I should not have to deepen my resilience to something that should not be happening in the first place. Yeah. And so I think there's a conscientizing that needs to happen. If we're doing body work, yes, it is a personal process. It's for me as an individual. But yes, absolutely not losing sight of what is a bigger picture, and not doing it, you know, showing up with your Starbucks and your yoga mat like a little poppy, without understanding that healing, there's sacred work. You're on sacred ground, you know, when you're in the body. Yeah, just not treating it with the gravitas that it deserves. Thanks, Jen. That was an important point. Dr. B, we were talking about plants and nature, and I want to understand what else can we draw from in nature to help us with holistic healing? Because not everybody has the money to go see a divine person like Jenna and pay for therapy, or a divine person like yourself. And we have to make livings as healing practitioners, but not everyone's got the money for that. What can we give those people?
Just a small comment that you're all divine. Equally divine.
Equally divine.
So I'm not more divine than any one of you. And yeah, you're not more divine than me. So we're equally divine. And we have different divine gifts that if we use them and understand why they're given to us, and we live our life according to those gifts, then we're connected to the source.
Mm-hmm.
Another comment regarding Jenna's social concerns and change of perception and being humble. A true healing automatically changes the perception. If it's not true healing, it won't change the perception. The perception. What I mean, I don't. Okay, for each person has different way to heal. Mm. And everybody has different path to heal on deep level.
Mm.
And there's not one specific path that you can recommend for everybody to be healed on deep level.
Mm.
Because if we try to do so, we'll go to either egotistical or narcissistic thinking that we're suggesting the only way, but that's not the only way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when true healing is experienced by any human, that automatically connects him or her with the divine energy and flow, and automatically the perception and the paradigm shifts into the right direction. Non-judgmental, unconditional love, humility and all that. That's automatic. If that doesn't happen, that healing wasn't deep enough or true enough. And therefore, that tells us that the journey continues and we need to find the most energetically suitable or any other type of healing that brings us to, holistic perception and divine perception of the world. Regarding animal whispering and plant whispering, we all humans have that in us. So we all animal and plant whisperers, but we forget that by the age of 7. Because of trauma, because of disconnection, because of thinking that the environment that we've been placed in is the correct environment. But we forget that we played in the mud, we played in the muddy water, we played in the rivers, we played in the lakes, and nobody bothered to wash immediately and stuff like that, because funny enough, the humic acid from the mud is vitally important for our gut and our body and for our immune system, because all these bugs and things that are there are practically strengthening us, they are not weakening us. So this excessive,
Sanitization
kills the natural ecosystem. And when you forget that we came from the earth, dust we are, to dust we go, and that's the way it is, sounds very brutal, but this is the way it is. The only thing that makes the dust alive is the spirit. So when the spirit is in us, the dust does all kinds of wonders. but when the spirit is left, the dust goes to the dust.
Mm.
So what I want to say is, naturally, every child from birth until 7 is in alpha state, is in self-connected state. And that is the parents and the school and the system work very hard to disconnect that child. Very, very hard. And it's all about deconditioning after that for life. Well, sometimes you're lucky that it might be shortened, but in most cases, a life deconditioning to unlearn things that disconnected us from ourselves and nature. And funny enough, in homeopathy, there is one remedy called Anhelonium Luini, which is Indian peyotl, that is described in the books of Carlos Castaneda and his hero Don Juan. But homeopathically, that Indian peyotl, which is called Anhelonium, connects the person with their gift of animal and plant whispering when the person can merge with plants, trees, and animals and hear them, and them hearing the person. So this is inborn attribute to every human, that we are one with nature, nature is one with us. So it's not something that is exclusive. However, nowadays, most people, about 99.5%, are disconnected. And when you see on the TV, oh, here's a great animal whisperer, and here's a great plant whisperer, and here's the great African traditional healer that hears the herbs calling them from the field to pick it up or revealed in a dreams to heal specific things, we go like, wow. But practically this, all of us, it's the rest, we shut down the connection and the gift. And then when you see those people, we forget that we are the same when you are like babies and children and playing in the parks and gardens and forests and rivers and muddy waters and rolled in the mud, and we were like until 11 o'clock outside, not watching screens and TVs and anything like that. And then we understand this is not anything exclusive. It's just part of nature and part of growing and part of connection. So, yeah, just we need to be aware that this can always be done, and reconnecting back is absolutely possible.
Mm. Absolutely. I'm a strong believer in that myself. I have had conversations with trees. I'm not sure I should say this on a podcast where the whole world might be listening. But I have in fact had conversations with trees, and they talk back. It's beautiful and fascinating. I want to tell you the tiniest story, which I think just lends the credibility to what Dr. B is saying. And this happened to me just a month or 5 weeks ago. We'd gone to Kruger National Park with my family, and everyone in the car had set their intentions for what animals they would like to see. So I picked the wild dogs because they're incredibly rare in the park. It's very rare to see them or have an interaction with them. So I get the kids into a little meditative mindset, and I say to them, call to your animals and ask their permission and ask them if they would meet you. So you can't command them. Let's call them and see if they want to come. So the kids do this, and it's a fun thing for everyone. And of course, everyone sees their lion and giraffe and so forth. So at the end of the day, my son says to me, Mommy, I'm sorry you didn't get to see the wild dogs. And I say to him, but the dogs responded to me. They said to me, they're very far at the other end of the park. But when we come back on Thursday morning, this had happened on Tuesday. When we come back on Thursday morning, they're going to be waiting for us in the morning. And my kid looks at me like, okay, nut job. I don't know what you're talking about, but that can't be real. And we carry on with our trip and come back on Thursday morning and arrive in the park. Within less than a kilometer from the gate of the park, the wild dogs were lying in the road. It was the very first animals we saw. And so my son looks at me with big, huge eyes, and he said to me, Mommy, you made the magic real. And I said to him, but baby, the magic is real. Anyone can do this. It's just a matter of practicing it. It's not the first time I've been able to communicate with animals in that way. But I don't think I'm special. I think this is something people can do if we lean into it and cultivate, because we are of the planet. You know, we didn't hopefully arrive here by spaceship. We actually originate here. And so this is our true nature, is to be able to connect to these natural elements. I want to just get a last round of comments from everyone. What would you advise? A client walks into your space, they're in real struggle. What would you advise them to do? The first thing you can advise them to do to support their own healing process in a holistic way. What is that advice? I'm going to start with Verona.
I think, I would obviously take the intake form and then address, each section, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual, and get a good idea as to, what the belief system is. And then according to that, I would make suggestions. Yeah, that's probably what I would do. Do you want specifics or more specifics?
No, that was fine. We just wanted to understand, your process. I like what you said about understand their belief system. And that links to what Dr. B was saying, that not every remedy is going to work for every person. So it's so important that we don't impose what we think on others and in fact understand what they already believe. Thanks for mentioning that. I think it's an important point.
Like I was doing hypnotherapy, and in the process, the client jumped to a past life, and she was horrified because she was a reborn Christian and was very angry with me. And I realized that I had overlooked, asking what her religion was or what her, view was. And so I learned that. It only ever happened once, of course. So, you learn quickly as a therapist as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Akusa, what would you advise someone to do if they were coming with, you know, and let's keep it back to the body, body manifesting trauma, and you recognize that. So what would you advise?
Well, what I would usually say to them is you have what it takes within you. You have that power within you, and my role is really just to support you as you tap back into that power. There's nothing wrong with you. So that would be my first approach, because many times people believe that they're broken or something is wrong with them and they cannot be fixed, quote unquote fixed. And so having someone mirror to them, there's nothing wrong with you. You have everything inside of you. And all of you this morning or this afternoon, if it's afternoon in South Africa, have been dropping so many gems that I think anyone who hears some of the things that were said about being divine, being a divine person and the spirit and the dust meshes to become such a powerful being. And we have everything in nature that could heal us and what's in our DNA. I think one of the most important things is mirroring that back to the person as a starting point. And to remind them it's a journey, it's a process, so it would not happen overnight.
Thank you. I love that. You actually have everything inside you, all the ingredients of your own healing. And maybe here and there we need a guide or someone to walk the road with us. But it's really not to get something from the outside world. It's to activate something that is within. I love that. Dr. B, your gem of advice to someone who's coming with the traumas manifesting in the body.
Each gem for its own.
Mm.
So, the first thing is to reconnect with the divine essence, which is unbreakable. So people that think they are broken or injured, they are not. It's just a temporary state that as the spin of electrons and traumatic memories are released, they go back to normal. So the first is connecting a divine essence and synchronizing. However, the treatment for each person will be totally different, mm-hmm. because each person is individual, unique individual that cannot be compared to anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to take in mind that whatever their belief or religion or philosophy is, we have to work through it, because if we try to change that when it's not the right time, we're going to create more trauma. Mm. Regarding our goddess Akuswa from Trinidad and Tobago, just one thing that I say to all the surviving goddesses, that goddesses cannot be broken, because can you break the river? Not really. You see, goddesses are like a river. And the river cannot be broken, cannot be stopped. It always finds a way around the stones and the rocks. And they just need to restore the fluidity and the flow of their feminine energy that has been temporarily obstructed. But there's no such a thing as broken goddess. And no matter where it is, GBV, in the world, the first thing that they need to understand that they never been broken in the first place.
Talk to me, you're going to make me cry.
I know.
It's very Thursday today, and you are going to make me cry.
I make all girls to cry.
Oh, hopefully in a good way. Hopefully in a healthy tears, right?
Yeah, release.
In a good. Ever flowing around an obstacle, right? The obstacle doesn't stop the river. The river finds her way around it. Mm. Jenna, close us off with wisdoms.
There's something I was realized in the session with when I see clients. So often when they tell you things like, you know, I can't sleep, or I'm sweating a lot, or I have a bug in my stomach. The instinct is to say, you've got these symptoms, there's something wrong with you. But actually, in this session, I'm realizing that is your body talking to you.
Mm.
And so what I'm actually trying to say is to all clients out there who want to go for therapy, to make your perceived problem your power. Because when you go through those, so often the instinct is to pathologize ourselves. I have these symptoms, therefore what's wrong with me?
Mm.
But actually it's your body saying, I'm not safe in this current situation. It's your body saying, I need to change something. It's your body saying, this person or group of persons is not right for me. There's a mismatch, whatever the case may be.
Mm.
And that's often the instinct is when we have physical symptoms, we then pathologize, oh, I need to get help. But actually, so often we neglect the fact that our body talks to us.
Mm.
And I'm realizing that in this discussion here today. So not only as a professional, but as from a personal perspective, this has been a mind-breaking, mind-opening experience. Mm-hmm. So to make your perceived problem your power,
yeah,
would be my final gem.
Wow. Thank you for that. Beautiful. Indeed, beautiful. The Body Keeps the Score is a book by Bessel van der Kolk that I always recommend to people who want to understand more about how trauma lives in the body. We did only have an hour, but parting words for me is if you feel physical symptoms of stress and anxiety, if you have chronic pain, sleep issues, challenges with food and your eating habits, if you feel sexual dysfunctions, and I hate that phrasing because it's immediately pathologizing, but if you feel like you don't have a healthy relationship with sex or sexuality or your body in any way, shape, or form, please recognize that that is, as Jen has beautifully said for us, your body communicating with you and telling you, I need something different to happen here. And sometimes it's really a matter of saying, all right, I see the clue that you are giving me. Tell me more. Show me more. A couple of years ago, I said to my body, it was my New Year's resolution, which is funny, but also not funny because I'm not a New Year's resolution kind of person. But I said, I want my body to tell me when I'm eating things it doesn't like. And the response was crazy. I would start getting nauseous after certain foods. I would even just look at a meal and be like, no. My body's voice got so loud about what she did and didn't want to eat. And I thought, wow, I've been slowly poisoning you for 40 years without realizing these were things you didn't want. So sometimes it's really just, can we listen closer to the early indicators? Before we end up in the hospital, right? Before we end up with the heart attack, the diabetes, the blood pressure, can we listen to our bodies putting up those early red flags and saying, hey, something's not right? But if you don't have a body-based practice like the dance, like the TRE, and there are many other somatic practices that'll help you restore that connection, how will we even see the early warning signs? So the mind-body connection has to come, so that we can engage the body in a conversation about, hey, are you okay? What do you need to be different? Decades before we end up in the cardiologist's office. But I think that's the work. That's the ongoing work. And this global movement towards being much more holistic and trying to be drug-free in these treatments. Not everything requires, take this pill. Sometimes there are simpler, easier, safer ways of doing things. Thank you all so much for joining me. Your perspectives have been beautiful, invaluable. It's been a privilege to have someone from the Caribbean. The closest I've been to your part of the world is Mexico, which I am still in love with and still mourning the fact that I had to leave. But I have every intention of coming back to the Caribbean, to South America. I fell in love. My heart is still there. Of course, I thank you for getting up at the crazy, ridiculous early hours of the morning. Verona, joining us from Cape Town, thank you so, so, so much. Please keep doing the work you do. It's beautiful and important work for both of you. Dr. B, lovely to have you in studio. We've been working on and off with you over the years in other ways, and it was great to have you actually here. I think I've promised you a podcast for a while now. Jen, thank you. As always, magnificent working with you. Your insights are beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. And as Dr. B said, everyone is divine. everyone is divine. No one's more divine than the next person. So that is our takeaway. We're all divine and we're going to live in that energy for the rest of the day, wherever we are. Thank you all. Go well. It's been great.
Heal Your Mind podcast with Tracy Kotzen is hosted by Mental Wellness Initiative and supported by the Ford Foundation.